nada. Okay, I'm going to get started. Can you all hear me? I don't know if this is working. Hello, 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 hello. I'm going to have to speak loudly. All right? I won't carry a big stick. You know who said that? That's right, Teddy Roosevelt. Okay, so this is what we're talking about. You know all about the anatomy and histology of the kidney now. So I'm going to teach you where it came from. All right. And each time we talk about these systems, we always have to start way back at 3 weeks of age. And you've seen this picture before, right? What is this tissue right here? What germ layer is that? Ectoderm. What germ layer is all this? Mesoderm. What germ layer is this? Endoderm. And you have the lateral plate, splanchnic, and somatic. And what does the splanchnic mesoderm become? The muscle of the gut tube and all its derivatives. Very good. The muscle, the interstitial tissue, the cartilage. Okay, and what does the somatic lateral plate mesoderm become? Body wall. Okay, muscles, interstitial tissue, bones. Very, very good. We've talked about paraxial mesoderm, have we not? What are these little bumps supposed to show? Somites. Very good. And what does the paraxial mesoderm form? The vertebrae, very good. The vertebrae and some of the muscles of the spine. Excellent. So here is the mesoderm that has to this point been left out, intermediate mesoderm. And looking at this picture, you could maybe surmise how intermediate got its name. It's in between the paraxial and the lateral plate mesoderm. Okay? So that is what we're going to be talking about, intermediate mesoderm. Another view, okay, now you can see that the lateral bending is happening here in this picture in this transverse cut to the embryo. And here you can see the intermediate mesoderm, and it at this stage is it has a very similar shape to paraxial mesoderm. It is sort of elongated, going from the sort of the caudal end to the more cranial end of the embryo. It doesn't go as far forward as the paraxial mesoderm, because you remember those first couple of somites of the paraxial mesoderm help to make the bones of the head. So paraxial mesoderm comes all the way up. But running right alongside it, sort of in the abdomen part of the embryo, is the intermediate mesoderm. Okay. So now we're going to watch what happens to the intermediate mesoderm. Here is a view. The first thing that happens is that it changes from a brown color to a blue color. Okay. And there it is, and there is intermediate mesoderm, and now we call it the mesonephros. As soon as it goes from brown to blue, we call it a mesonephros. I'm making this up, okay? All right, so we notice where it's located. It's on either side. I sometimes liken them to two sausages lying on either side of the axis of the embryo. And also associated with the mesonephros is this little duct right here, same color, which is called the mesonephric duct. And alongside it, para means alongside, to the mesonephric duct is the paramesonephric duct. Now, in real life, these two are very, very close together. But in this diagram, they're showing them a little bit farther apart and different colors. We are not going to be talking about the paramesonephric duct today because that is going to help form the female reproductive system. So, here we have the mesoderm, and what's this brown tissue called right here? Yes, very good. That's the dorsal mesentery, excellent, which runs the whole length. And here you see the cloaca. This, we have the allantois, and this is going to be the rectum. And in another picture, you'll see right here the urorectal septum. A little bit of review never hurts. Is going to come down and separate the cloaca into those two openings. Note also, as I say here, is that both of these ducts, but specifically the mesonephric duct, attaches to the backside of the allantois. So that's the first thing that happens. Then what happens? Oh, we should also mention, look at the little gonad here, huh? There's the gonad. The gonad is also, the stroma of the gonad is from intermediate mesoderm. But more about that next week. Okay. Now, if we look at the mesonephros, oh, we can see the cranial end change color again. And similar to paraxial mesoderm, the intermediate mesoderm, now mesonephros, tends to segment a little bit. Remember the paraxial mesoderm segments into the somites? Well, it kind of segments in this tissue as well. But the very, very cranial ends of the mesonephros are going to just sort of pop up and then disappear immediately. They are vestigial structures. They'll be there for maybe 2 or 3 or 4 days, and then they will just completely involute. They're called the pronephros. Okay, and so now we have the mesonephros. The pronephros has moved away from the mesonephros. This part is still retaining the term mesonephros. And for the first about 7 weeks, about from 3 to 10 weeks or so, this mesonephros is functioning. It's forming little glomeruli, and it's draining filtrate down into the mesonephric duct, which is so conveniently right next door. Something got expurgated there for some reason. That's kind of interesting. Okay, and I'm going to show you what that arrangement looks like, a little higher power. So we're getting a little bit closer here. Here's the dorsal mesentery. Okay, now actually, the blue is the gut tube, right? That's endoderm, and this is splanchnic mesoderm, right? Never hurts to review. So here you see the mesonephros. And in the mesonephros, if you could look at it under a microscope, a little glomerulus is going to form right there in the mesonephros. It's going to have a little tiny little tubule, and it's conveniently going to connect to the mesonephric duct. And where does the mesonephric duct go to? The back end of the allantois. What do you suppose the allantois is going to be? The bladder, absolutely. Okay, another view, which will show that conveniently the aorta is right next door. There's the aorta. The interaction between in this tissue is going to cause a little tiny little branch of arterial and venous branch to come, and this will form the nephron right here. There's the mesonephric duct. There's the paramesonephric duct. Also, you can see this, the germ cells coming from the yolk sac are at the same time going to populate that mesonephros tissue. There's going to be a gonad. More about that next week. Okay. Now, many and most embryology books show this development of this glomerulus just like that. Like suddenly this little tubule, which is sometimes called an S-tubule. You can see how it got its name, S-tubule. That somehow the S-tubule just kind of goes out and forms a cup. And then the little capillary tuft drops into it. That's not how it happens at all. And I'm going to show you how it really happens. This is a close-up. Look at the histology here of a developing kidneys. And here, let's look at this first and then this diagram. Here what we see is this tubule, this S-tubule, that corresponds to this, okay? And you can see how it's folding on itself. And you see how the epithelium is nice and thick and luxuriant. And here's the lumen of that tubule, and there's the lumen, and there's the lumen of the same tubule. What is that space called in a glomerulus? Bowman's space, absolutely. So what you can see, and here is the glomerular tuft forming right in between this segment of the tubule and this segment of the same tubule. So the two tubules, the two segments of the same tubule lie against each other, and in between will be recruited the capillaries and the mesangial cells, which I don't think you covered too much in your histology, but there are mesangial cells in there as well. This is a little farther on. You can see the glomerular tuft is beginning to have a little bit more volume, actually not much more here. And there, this tubule right here corresponds to this one right here. It's just a different cut. Then when the glomerulus is completely formed, this segment, again, lumen continuous with this lumen, is just sort of going to back away, and that glomerulus is ready to receive filtrate and send filtrate right down the S-tubule. Okay? This is kind of an old diagram, but it does show here. This is represents the S tubule, okay, and this does as well. And this tube that is connecting, which is not depicted in this picture. In this picture, all you're seeing is the S tubule right here. You're not seeing this. What is this tube? The mesonephric duct. Okay, so the mesonephric duct is inducing this S tubule to form. They connect, they form a glomerulus. Okay? And this is an embryonic kidney. This is going to be there for about 7 weeks and then it's going to disappear. Just a pause. Look at this lovely picture. I'm not sure if this is human or not, but it's a lovely picture. So what is this right here? That's the aorta. Here is, what kind of mesentery is that? That's a dorsal mesentery. And here is the mesonephros right there. And look at, there's the mesonephric duct. See, and you can actually see it almost connecting right here. Yep, and what do you think these little guys are right there? Those are the gonads, the little gonadal stroma tissue that's going to receive the germ cells. And here is, what do you think that is? That's part of the gut tube. Absolutely. Very, very good. And here is the body wall of this embryo. And this, therefore, is the peritoneal cavity right there. So this mesonephros will last until about 10 weeks, you know, when the baby's about that big, and disappear. All right. Well, we still haven't made our definitive kidney. Where does that come from? Well, now I've taken the same diagrams, and I've revealed what's happening at the caudal end of the mesonephros. Okay? The most caudal end of the mesonephros, right here, this black tissue depicted like this black tissue, is called the metanephros. The metanephros. Okay? And it's just the caudal end of the mesonephros. But the reason why it's special and it's different is that another duct comes off the kind of the distal end of the mesonephric duct, and it is going to make connection with this part of the mesonephros. Okay? And that little yellow duct is called the ureteric bud. What do you suppose that's going to become? The ureter. Sometimes these terms can be helpful. Exactly. But notice that the same relationship is happening. A duct is making connection with a mesonephros, you get glomeruli. Now a diverticulum off the mesonephric duct is going into the caudal end of the mesonephros and is going to make the definitive kidney. Okay? And this is usually happening around 5 weeks. So there's a period of time, 4 or 5 weeks, that both the mesonephros and the metanephros are kind of operating at the same time. Okay. So, this is just another review. This is another term that you often see in embryology books, the metanephric blastema. It's exactly the same thing as the metanephros. Even though we now say mesonephros and metanephros, we need to understand that the metanephros arises from the caudal end of the metanephros. Okay. And then what is going to happen, as you know, because of differential growth of the embryo, what's going to happen is that that kidney is going to ascend relative to the other organs and go up and assume its, you know, kind of upper abdominal retroperitoneal positions. Okay? Ooh, you've seen this before, huh? There's the urorectal septum. Right? What's the definition of a cloaca? It receives what three organ systems? Good. Urinary, reproductive, and GI. Excellent. Okay. The exact same interaction happens. I just used the same pictures. Okay? The exact same interaction happens, but now the actors are different. The two actors are the metanephros and the ureteric bud. So in this diagram, this part is the ureteric bud. This part is, you know, a little piece of tissue of the metanephros. Same interaction is happening, two different sets of pairs of players. Okay? So, I still find this diagram kind of useful. This is kind of a fun thing. Your enteric bud divides 19 times within each kidney. You end up with 1 to 3 million collecting ducts, because the ureteric bud is going to form the collecting ducts. The collecting ducts, okay? So if we look at this picture now, this is the ureteric bud. You see how it's dividing right here. Wherever you sort of see a heart, that is where the ureteric bud is dividing. See? And you can divide, 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 and it's going to grow and divide, grow and divide, grow and divide, so that the deeper glomeruli are actually older than the more superficial subcapsular glomeruli. Okay? So the deeper ones are made first. The ones up right under the capsule are made later. And glomerulogenesis continues in the metanephros until about 34 weeks. I need to know that as a perinatal pathologist to determine, you know, I know the gestational age of the fetus is renal development continuing as it should, and it should be done by 34 weeks, and that's a pretty hard and fast rule, surprisingly, in human development. 34 weeks, bam, there's no more glomerulogenesis going on. Yes, please. That's a good question. I think it continues. I think it does continue. It's interesting, though, in the lung that, remember, lung development, that division stops. The lung development actually stops as soon as that baby is born. Yes. And there are situations in which the glomerulogenesis is halted sooner. I'm going to show you an example a little bit later. Okay, and here is a fetal kidney. Okay, so here are the collecting ducts, essentially, right here. And here's the cortex. And you can see how right underneath the capsule is still kind of blue. It means that there's a lot of cells there that are not fully differentiated, to kind of have a high NC ratio, so they're going to look kind of blue. And that is the glomerulogenic tissue. That's the immature tissue developing into glomeruli. They have a higher power. And here it is. So this is probably... these are cuts of the S tubule right in here. Okay. And then this mesenchyme right there is basically metanephros. That's metanephros tissue. This part of it formed the S tubule. It's going to make a glomerulus. And then this tissue is going to make another one, one on top of the other. Okay. Here you see a pretty well developed glomerulus. This was probably that tubule, you know, contiguous with this one. And you can see how it's sort of backing away, ready to receive the filtrate from the glomerulus. And very, very early on, I mean, basically immediately when a nephron is made, you could tell the difference between a distal convoluted tubule. I mean, excuse me, this is a proximal convoluted tubule and a distal convoluted tubule. They differentiate right away. Piece of trivia that you really don't need to know, but I'll tell you anyway. Okay. So, little didactic summary. This is going a lot faster than I thought. Metanephros is basically forms the renal cortex. The glomeruli and the nephron from the proximal to basically the distal convoluted tube before it goes into the collecting ducts. That's where most of the important stuff goes on, other than just, you know, water retention in the collecting ducts. And then the ureteric bud, divide, 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 forms the collecting ducts, the calyx, and the ureter. Okay? So this is sort of like the plumbing, and this is where all the diffusion, most of the diffusion secretion absorption happens. Okay, so that's good. But now we have to make a bladder. We have to canalize the ureter. We got to figure out what's going to happen to these two ducts here if we are talking about a male. And it, for a moment, we have to talk about a male. So here's the arrangement we have, right? You see how the ureteric bud is coming off the mesonephric duct, and you can see if you were in the bladder right now, you'd only see two orifices of the left and right mesonephric duct, okay? Well, that is not the adult situation. If this is a male, what we need to have is we have to have one opening for two openings for the ureteric, for the ureters, And we have to have two openings for the vas. And I have to jump ahead, and I have to tell you that in the male, the mesonephric duct is going to form the vas deferens. We have to know that for this discussion. Okay? So the way that we separate these two systems, at least in the ductular level, is basically what's going to happen is this little segment right there, see that little segment right there of mesonephric duct and a little bit of ureteric butt, is basically going to grow right into the back wall of the bladder. Grow right back, just grow right back, right into the back of the bladder, such that this incorporation of the segment happens to the extent that suddenly the ureteric buds have their own orifices and the mesonephric duct, i.e. ventral vas, have their own orifices. Okay? And then what generally happens is that the ureteral orifices, ureteric bud, will raise up a little bit in the back of the bladder. We'll show a picture in just a second. And the two orifices for the mesonephric duct will stay kind of low down in the bladder and closer together. Okay? So let's look at this process from the backside of the allantois, the eventual bladder. So what we're going to do is we're going to sit right here in the midline of the embryo and look in that direction. And what do we see? And this is what we see. We see now... I had to block this out. I can't remember why, but it kind of, I don't have to talk about the trigone. But now you see we have four orifices instead of two. Okay? And then also the ascent of the ureteral orifices up here. So if you look at the back of the bladder, you're going to see sort of a triangular area bounded by the two ureteral orifices and the ejaculatory ducts, okay? And they're going to form sort of this triangle, and that is called a trigone, okay? And some of that tissue then is of what germ layer? Mesoderm, intermediate mesoderm, right? Because the mesonephric duct came from the mesoderm, the ureteric bud came from the mesonephric duct, which came from the mesoderm. So you have intermediate mesoderm tissue forming part of that trigone of the bladder. Okay, so the bladder then is formed in the lining by endoderm, the muscle by splanchnic mesoderm, and a little bit in the trigone of intermediate mesoderm. Okay? So that's kind of interesting. And there are actually tumors that arise right in that trigone that are more often like adenocarcinomas, whereas the rest of the bladder mucosa is urothelial tumors. You see a higher incidence of adenocarcinomas is probably because of its different embryologic origin. Okay, does that make sense? Okay. All right, you're going to rest. You're going to pause. We're going to look at the real thing for a second, okay? So you're going to name that organ. Okay, so what's that? Body of a vertebra came from? Paraxial mesoderm, absolutely. Here's body wall with some muscle. Where did that come from? Yes, came from myotome, absolutely. A little bit of paraxial mesoderm, also some somatic lateral plate mesoderm. Very good. Okay, and what do you think that is? Kidney, that is the kidney, yep. And this is a very young little embryo because those are glomeruli. It looks like we only see maybe just one generation of glomeruli from here to the top. So this is pretty darn young. Okay, normally you see about seven layers. If you could roughly look at an adult kidney, you'll see sort of six or seven layers of glomeruli. Okay, very good. And what do you think this is? This is hard. Because we really don't talk about this paired organ that is right next to the kidneys. Adrenals, those are the adrenal glands. Yeah, they come from salomic epithelium. The coelom come from salomic epithelium. Yep, those are the adrenals. And this is some of the splanchnic autonomic nervous system here. Autonomic nervous system. Very good. Okay. Coming down to anomalies. going to be done early. What happens if the ureteric bud never reaches the metanephros? There's the answer. Okay? No kidney. The two have to come in contact with each other to get a kidney. Okay? And this is kind of an amazing fetus that I autopsied many years ago. And here you have one kidney, which we'll talk about in a second. There was no other kidney. And here is the very tortuous ureter that comes from the ureteric bud, absolutely. And what's really interesting, and this is a little bit of skin of the umbilicus here, so that's sort of the umbilical area here. What's also very interesting about this, and I don't have a good embryologic explanation, is there was literally a hemi bladder. It was just a half of a bladder, and that's very hard to explain. I'm not going to even try to explain that, but that was very interesting. Okay, so what happens if the interaction between ureteric bud and mesonephros is abnormal? This could be due to gene mutations, some of which are known. There are probably a lot more that are to be discovered. What you end up is with cystic disease of the kidney, and this other kidney here, the only kidney, is, as you can see, has many, many cysts. Cystic disease of the kidney is a fascinating subject. There are about 6 or 7 different types. Some are autosomal dominant. Some are autosomal recessive. Some are just sporadic. And a very interesting topic. But all come down to the abnormal interaction between these two components. Well, the spectrum of cystic disease is huge. If this fetus had two kidneys like this, it's very unlikely that this kidney was able to generate filtrate. I call it filtrate in a fetus because it's not really urine. The placenta is taking care of all that. Okay. It's not going to generate a lot of filtrate. And so they will get oligohydramnios, which we're going to talk about a little bit later. Yep. And also, this ureter looks rather tortuous, but also looks kind of small, suggesting that there's not a lot of filtrate coming down. There are other cystic diseases of the kidney that do not show themselves until early adulthood, like autosomal dominant polycystic kidney disease, which is pretty common. And it's not uncommon for people in their 20s or so to present with an abdominal mass. Okay, because these cysts are not present at birth. They accumulate throughout life. So there's a huge spectrum of cystic disease. Yeah. Okay. What happens if outflow through the urethra is obstructed? I'm showing this just because it's a really great little picture. This is a tiny little fetus. Here is the umbilical cord. So here's the bladder, and you can see how dilated the bladder is. And what will happen is if the kidneys are normally secreting filtrate but can't empty the bladder, that backup pressure is going to go back up the ureters. And these ureters are fairly dilated. Actually, you can see the calyces are dilated. This is pretty small. I mean, we're talking, 3-4 centimeters. This thing is about this big. Okay? So that backup increased pressure will stop glomerulogenesis. And in this kidney, we'd see a lot of cysts and no more glomerulogenesis way before 34 weeks. Okay. We had a case like this in which the only abnormality in the genitourinary system was right. It was a male fetus at the very tip of the penis. And remember, we talked about the canalization of the anus, where that ectoderm has to let go, open it up, and allow this orifice. Well, in this little fetus, everything was normal except the very, very, very tip of the penis, which had never cannulated. The penile urethra was dilated. The bladder was dilated. Everything proximal to that was dilated because of this one tiny little localized place, which is very interesting. Okay. Okay, what happens if the caudal ends of the metanephros fused together? Okay, now think about the embryo. Remember, you got a metanephros here and you got a metanephros there. And you kind of think, it's pelvis down there. There's not quite as much room. What happens if the two caudal ends stick together and fuse? Okay? Well, you end up with something like this. And let's just get you oriented. Here's the bladder. Pretty big. There is the right umbilical artery. There's the left umbilical artery. And you know what that is? Totally out of context. That's the belly button. Okay? So here's the skin ellipse. There's skin, and that's the cut umbilical cord. Okay? So what shape is that? What? Exactly. It's a horseshoe-shaped kidney, or U-shaped, horseshoe-shaped kidney. Why does that happen? How does it get to be a horseshoe? Yes, well, the two kidneys are trying to raise up, but they're fused together at the bottom. What is the thing, the midline thing, that they're going to get hung up on? Close, the aorta, a branch off the aorta. What's the most caudal midline arterial branch off the aorta? Inferior mesenteric artery. Somebody say that? I think they said that. Inferior mesenteric artery. So the thing is tethered down there. It tries to ascend, and that's how a horseshoe kidney gets its shape. Okay? Is this compatible with life? Absolutely. Absolutely. This, I do not think, was the main cause of the demise and ultimate autopsy of this patient. Okay, so that is, yes, that's a horseshoe kidney, and pretty common. Okay, what happens if the ureteric bud divides before it reaches the metanephros? These are variations that some of you may have seen in your cadavers. Okay, what happens is, you know, it's moving along, you know, it wants to divide. Where's that metanephros? It just can't stand it. Boom, it bifurcates, it divides, and then meets the metanephros. What do you end up with? A double ureter on the left side, or on whatever side. Okay, what does ML stand for? Median ligament. Do you see that in your cadaver? The median ligament. It looks like a ligament, and it's midlines. And we're going to talk about that in a little bit. So that's what you get if it divides before it reaches the metanephros, a bifid or duplicated ureter. Okay. Okay, so we should talk about oligohydramnios sequence. Oligohydramnios, oligo means low, hydramnios means amniotic fluid, or in this context, okay? So low amniotic fluid. In the third trimester, much of the amniotic fluid is coming from the baby's kidneys, okay? Filtrate, wonderful stuff. Filtrate, placenta's taking care of all the waste problems, okay? But in patients, in fetuses that have no kidneys, ureteric bud on both sides never made contact with the metanephros, no kidneys, called renal agenesis. And this is the first setting in which oligohydramnios sequence was described called Potter syndrome, because Edith Potter was one of the first great American pediatric pathologists. So we name it in her honor, Edith Potter. Actually, she was the first one to really describe it. So what happens when you get very little amniotic fluid, this is a bit of a digression, but this is an important concept, is that this fetus is in this tight cavity, okay? It's not swimming around in this big, happy swimming pool. It's very compressed on by the uterus. And therefore, we see a number of abnormalities. We see contractures. Because the fetus can't stretch and move the extremities around, they'll get contractures, just as we would. Okay? Just as we would. They get prominent palpebral fissures, which are the folds right underneath the eyes, right under there. And the reason why is because the uterus is just pushing up against their face like that. Okay? They get a flattened nose and flattened ears for the same reason, just being pushed up. Okay? They get a recessed chin, which I can't really show you here because we don't have a lateral, because the mandible is being pushed back posteriorly, okay, again by the uterine pressure. And then the most deadly consequence of oligohydramnios is this, pulmonary hypoplasia. We talked about this when we talked about lung development. The chest is compressed upon, the lungs are compressed upon, and they get pulmonary hypoplasia, and that's what they die of, okay? They die of pulmonary hypoplasia. This was an amazing fetus that we autopsied many years ago. And actually, I have, you know, pushed the head up. But you see this indentation right there? And you see this sort of indentation up? That chin was just pushed down like that. That's how compressed this baby was. And you can see all the contractions. So that is what happens when you have no kidneys whatsoever. That is incompatible with life. And before ultrasound, you know, 20, I don't know how many years ago, you know, moms would have a happy, you know, unremarkable gestation, have a term delivery, and the baby just dies within about 5 hours. So pretty shocking and sad. But now this is easily recognized. By ultrasound, unfortunately, there's not much you can do about it. But you can just do counseling and prepare the parents for the loss of this fetus. That has been tried to inject fluid, but that's kind of a very dangerous thing when you think about injecting fluid in some sterile space. Very, very dangerous in terms of, you know, causing infection, number one. But if you also put in a lot of fluid, the uterus might get a little bit irritable and say, hey, let's end this and go into contractions and she would deliver. But that has been tried. Not necessarily. That, you can see that in high drops. We talked about high drops where you get severe edema of a baby. These babies are not edematous. That's another cause for pulmonary hypoplasia, is severe high drops, severe edema with pleural effusions. Is that may be what you're talking about? We talked about that, yeah. That is a different pathogenesis. Excellent. So that's oligohydramnio sequence. Now, renal agenesis is not, this is obstetrical aside here, is not the only cause of oligohydramnios, okay? Another one is an obstetrical problem, which is chronic amniotic fluid leak. If mom breaks her membranes and loses fluid, either in one being gush or chronically in low amounts, oligohydramnios can result as well. Okay. Okay, here is the bladder. Okay. Remember the urorectal septum came down there, huh? Separate the bladder from the rectum. Okay. And then remember the allantois has that extension out into the umbilical cord? Remember that? And you remember the gut tube? Well, I should call it the intestines now. Had one coming out there too. Do you remember anything related to that extension out into the umbilical cord? Yeah, there's physiologic herniation when this loop comes out. But this thing, remember, it ends in a little something? The yolk sac. Very good. So that's called the omphalomesenteric duct or the vitelline duct. And now this is the allantoic duct or remnant extends out. Okay? Just remember that. Now, what happens if this little part here, because that should close, right? Now we're going outside of the inside of the fetus, and we're going to the inside of the umbilical cord, that should close. What happens if it doesn't close? You end up with a fistula. When it does close, it forms the diagram next. Let's go to the next diagram. It's better. Okay. So what you're going to end up with is a persistent uracus. Now, I'm going to just, we got to make sure we get this nomenclature right. So I'm going to go back for a minute. We're going to go to this picture. Here's the bladder. All right? And then when the bladder ends right here, the lumen closes, there's a little bit of that allantoic remnant extends out to the belly button. That is the uracus. Okay? That is the uracus. And then that continues out into the umbilical cord, and that's the allantoic remnant. The whole thing is allantois, but you see how it extends out? Okay, so normally this uracus should be closed. You can't see it, but it's behind the skin, extending from the bladder to right here. That should close. Because if it doesn't close, what's going to happen? You're going to have urine coming out the belly button. And this is the various results that you can get from incomplete closure of this part of the allantois or the uracus. So here's the bladder. Here you can see it's completely open. That's a patent uracus. Okay? Just like that patent omphalomesenteric duct coming off the intestines, right? Same kind of problem, but different contents. This is urine. The other one was small bowel contents. You can end, why are they calling this a polyp? I do not know. Here is closed here, but this would be sort of like a sinus. That would be actually better termed a sinus. All right, that mucosa might produce a little bit of secretion, so there'd be some chronic small amount of secretion coming out of the umbilicus. Okay, sometimes the bladder will have a diverticulum coming off like that, where the proximal end of this urethra stays open. And sometimes both ends are closed except for the center area, which would cause a cystic structure midline, could get infected, could be palpated by the parents, cause concern, and bring the child in. Okay? Exact same type of process as we talked about with the omphalomesenteric duct system. Okay. So here are the three kidney systems. We're coming down to the end. Pronephros is rudimentary, doesn't really do anything. Mesonephros, very important, functions for a few days as a kidney, drained by the mesonephric duct. The metanephros, the adult kidney, drained by the ureteric bud. And there's the whole thing right there. Okay, and there it is. Okay, so all this, the cortex basically, metanephros, the collecting system down to the bladder is the ureteric bud. Okay, any questions? All right. All right. Enjoy your 15 minutes. I'll see you next week for the grand finale.